WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. There's a court hearing today challenging the Department of Government Efficiency's authority to make cuts, but ABC's Rachel Scott says it's already made sweeping cuts with more on the way.
Over at the FAA, one union says several hundred probationary workers began to receive firing notices on Friday night. Immigration judges also a part of the sweeping cuts, with 13 who were about to be sworn in fired on Friday, and two current judges were removed without cause. And at the Department of Energy, at least 2,000 workers let go. More than 1,000 people fired from Veterans Affairs and another 1,000 from the CDC.
It's confusion at the agency that maintains the nation's nuclear stockpile. 300 employees were fired, but officials now trying to hire them back. 10 people are dead, 9 of them in Kentucky as a result of extensive flooding in the region. And Pope Francis requires further hospitalization, according to the Vatican, saying the 88-year-old's respiratory tract infection presents a complex picture. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin has introduced legislation to cap the cost of prescription drugs for millions. According to a press release, the Capping Prescription Costs Act would place a limit on out-of-pocket costs for prescription drugs of $2,000 per year for individuals and $4,000 for families with private insurance. A similar measure was passed through the Inflation Reduction Act for senior citizens. Senator Baldwin says studies have shown 31% of people who need medication weren't taking it because of cost. State Republicans are proposing a bill that would help Wisconsin schools install and maintain water filters. The draft bill calls on school boards to develop plans to manage the drinking water to ensure students will not be exposed to things like lead or PFAS, which have been linked to negative health effects, especially in children. Governor Tony Evers has expressed support for the legislation, saying it seems to be in line with his efforts to promote safe drinking water in schools. Funding for the filters could come from previous PFAS legislation. An Ashland man accused of operating while intoxicated before a single vehicle crash that led to a vehicle fire and power outage in October has been charged. According to court documents, 60-year-old Terry Weaver is facing his 9th OWI charge as well as felony bail jumping charges. He could receive a sentence of over 20 years in prison if convicted. The crash occurred on October 22nd when Weaver allegedly hit a power pole on Lakeshore Drive East. The impact snapped the pole, causing an hours-long outage and setting the car's engine on fire. A Bayfield woman who abandoned her kids and fled the scene of an accident has been sentenced. According to court documents, 32-year-old Casey Gokey entered a no-contest plea to charges of neglecting a child and abandonment of a child on Tuesday. She was sentenced to serve 90 days in jail unless she completes a substance abuse assessment and maintains absolute sobriety. Gokey was arrested after law enforcement authorities received a report of her 9-year-old and 5-year-old being left behind in her car following a 1 a.m. collision in June. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Badgers get national attention. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers making national headlines after their upset win at Purdue 94-84. Are they poised for a higher seed in the tournament when the selection committee meets next month? Head coach Greg Gard.
We got a lot of basketball left to play before that day comes, so that's great. That means we got the attention of people, right? We're obviously playing good basketball. We're a really good team, and I think we're getting better. And that's the exciting part, that they know there's a lot more left to come. And, you know, that starts with, you know, our next game.
And the Badgers women's team with a win at Penn State yesterday, 75-68. They'll host Northwestern on Sunday afternoon. Baseball spring training underway. The Brewers' Christian Yelich asked how's he doing after that season-ending back surgery last summer.
I feel fine. I don't see any reason why I wouldn't be ready for opening day.
That's the Brewers' Christian Yelich. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. A frigid President's Day with mostly sunny skies, highs near zero, wind chill values as cold as 35 below. Tonight, mostly clear, a low of 23 below, wind chill values as low as 37 below. Stay warm and stay safe. It's 15 below at our studios.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Inflation has to go down. How would you suggest your president address that? He's not talking about the cost for Americans. Hell, everything he's doing seems to going to increase the cost for Americans, starting with trade wars with Canada and Mexico. So if there is something positive out of this administration, let me know what it is. I would absolutely give credit where credit is due if I see it.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller and Northeast Wisconsin hip-hop artist and musician Matt Harper joins me in studio. We're going to light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
Say it's my country. Before they give in,
they'd rather fuss and fight
than say it's my country. I paid 300 years or more of slave driving sweat and wealth on my back. This is my country.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. My guess is the one and only Reggie Jackson, award-winning journalist. Are you still writing for The Independent?
Occasionally, Earl. I've been focusing most of my writing recently on a book that I'm writing about the history of segregation in Milwaukee. I'm hoping to complete this summer. That's been the main focus of my writing. So I haven't written as much for The Independent.
You know, educator, speaker, award-winning in all those different areas. You know, Reggie, I know that the conversation that we are having, you know, is a hard one for some people to swallow. But, you know, it's a conversation that has to be had. And when people continue to be hurt because of these practices, generationally, Reggie, and as I look inside of you and my community, and we watch what is taking place, and people can say, well, those people are criminals, and all they want to do is all these, you know, commit crimes, and so people cry out for more police in our neighborhoods and in our communities. And just like the Kerner Report, had there been equal opportunities for people? When people, Reggie, are at their wits' end and they don't see any way out in the wealthiest nation on earth. Come on, man. This is not Cuba. This is America. And you watch a man like Donald Trump and Elon Musk, and they're doing things to make things even more difficult for people who struggle in this society. When they are getting ready to pull the safety net from beneath the people who need it the most, they're getting ready to do this, and yet in the face of all of those things, Calvin, Reggie, there just is not any hue and outcry enough for people to address the wrong man. Why is it not something that should be discussed when we're talking about this nation and it not dealing fairly with American citizens, Reggie, who are born in this nation like all other citizens, who supposedly have the same citizenship rights, but in the face of that, we see that these things that exist that don't give us equal opportunities and equal access, and yet people are silent on that. I get it from 1940 and 30s and 50s and 60s, Reggie, but I don't get it in 2025. It's not acceptable. And so people aren't willing to have the discussion and the conversations. Why? Why are people not willing to have that conversation?
Well, I think there are a couple of factors, Earl. I think number one on that list is that, you know, some of these things from the historical past are very embarrassing for many Americans to hear things that happened that they were told the exact opposite happened. And that's really hard for people to digest, Earl. There's a mythology of America being the land of opportunity, but there's another side of the coin that shows when you listen to the voice of people of color that this hasn't been the land of opportunity for us consistently. And people don't want to hear that. People think that that is, you know, demeaning the country, being unpatriotic, things of that nature. And it scares people to hear those things. And I think secondarily, Earl, it feeds into this idea that, you know what, we've done enough for those people. Why are they still asking for more? The understanding from our community is that, listen, what you've given us hasn't been enough because doors of opportunity is still shut. And I take great deal of solace, Earl, in reading some local scholarship done by the UW-Milwaukee Center for Economic Development, a report that they issued in April of last year called the Index of African-American Wellbeing in the Nation's Largest Metropolitan Areas 2024 edition. And this hard-hitting report by Mark Levine's group there at UW-Milwaukee, I think it's something that everybody should read. It gives you a clear indication that, you know, Milwaukee in particular is a place that is going backwards in terms of progress when it comes to many of these factors. And the causes for that are in this report. Can I read just a little bit of what the report says?
Absolutely.
Real quick, Earl.
Absolutely.
It says on virtually all key indicators of Black community well-being, Milwaukee ranks at or near the bottom when ranked against the large metropolitan areas. Moreover, Black Milwaukee is generally worse off today than it was 40 or 50 years ago. Milwaukee ranks by a clear margin at the bottom of all metro areas examined on the composite index of African-American well-being. Most disturbingly, this poor performance is consistent on almost all the indicators for which we collected data to construct the index. Milwaukee ranked dead last on the composite index of African-American well-being. On 20 of the 44 individual indicators making up the index, Milwaukee ranked 48th or worse. On 14 indicators, Milwaukee ranked last or next to last, by far the worst performance of any of the metro areas in the index. Milwaukee continues to post the lowest Black median household income, the highest Black poverty rate, the lowest percentage of African Americans holding a college degree or higher, and the widest racial disparities among the 50 largest metro areas in income, poverty, educational attainment, and prime working age male employment. And of course, Milwaukee continues to register the highest Black, non-Hispanic white residential segregation rate among the metro areas. This is in no way to sugarcoat the numbers. Milwaukee remains firmly ensconced as the nation's lowest ranked large metro area in African-American well-being. And, you know, if you read this report and you see that Milwaukee is dead last in many of these indicators, Earl, it explains a lot about what we see happening in our community on a regular basis. I don't think people clearly understand the challenges that we face here in Milwaukee.
You know, Reggie, as somebody, you know, who's in our community, as somebody who volunteers his time as much as I do, and who works and who is doing all that he can, and he sees this this poverty and he sees this pain. That children, Reggie, you see it in children. Children who at 4 or 5 years old, you know, don't know. Children up to 8, 10 years old. But something happens when they get to be about 12, 13, 14 years old. They start realizing, looking around, and seeing that things are different for them. And so they get lost. That people wonder why kids aren't learning. Well, the schools aren't doing, you're an educator. Well, the kids aren't learning because the schools can't teach them properly. Well, it's hard for a young person, Reggie, to think about being educated when they're hungry in the morning. There are people in our community who aren't eating properly, who are moving from place to place. They carry their belongings in black paper bags. I mean, plastic bags. And so they're moving their transients, families, women, and children. And this permeates our community. And they wonder why so many young people turn to violence, Reggie. They wonder why so many young people only see one way out. And so the answer can't be more police, which is what the refrain is, unfortunately, from many in the white communities, not just across the city of Milwaukee or the state or the nation. It's always more police, more police. Well, you know what? You're not going to ever have enough police to address the issues that happen when people are not given fair opportunity at an opportunity in this nation, Reggie.
Yeah, I completely agree, Earl. You know, we have to understand the society that these children are coming from. You know, I was a teacher in Milwaukee Public Schools for 8 years, and I can attest to everything you said. I had students who came to the school angry because they were hungry, because they hadn't eaten, you know. Sometimes I had students that would come and tell me they hadn't eaten all weekend because their families, you know, were homeless. I had a student in particular, I remember, who came to school exceptionally angry on a Monday morning. And, you know, all of the teachers were very upset by this kid being disrespectful. And they asked me to talk to this boy. And I had a relationship with this kid. He had been my student. And so when I talked to him, he said, "Mr. Jackson, we were kicked out of our house on Friday. We've been living in our car all weekend. And we haven't had anything to eat other than some chips from the gas station." And so how can you expect a kid in that situation, Earl, to come to school eager to learn on a Monday morning when he's been homeless and doesn't know where he's going to go and live? You know, at the end of the school day that day, these are things that some of our kids deal with on a perpetual basis. And when we talk about, you know, how poorly MPS is doing, we have, as you said, a transient population of students. You know, no other school district in Wisconsin is dealing with, you know, the demographics of the students that MPS has, a transient population. People are moving constantly. People are being, you know, evicted from their homes and apartments. Regularly in Milwaukee.
Ray, Reggie, how much of this do you think is because people are segregated in the state and they don't get to see black people and on a daily basis, sometimes not even in a month. And so they draw conclusions predicated on things they hear on Fox News and other places. And they think that black people are criminals and all these kinds of things because they're not around black people. We only make up 6% of the population. There clearly is not enough of us to go around where people who live in this state get to see us.
Yeah, absolutely, Earl. You know, I would often be asked by people, you know, people say, "Reggie, you know, I wish I had a black friend to talk to about some of these issues." And I would always joke that there's not enough of us to go around for every white person to have a black friend.
Reggie, hold the thought. 855-752-4842. You're tuned into a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show.
As a nation, this is my
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
The Badgers.
Seeds Max face the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir. Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts on a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Slam dunk, Steven Crow hammers it down.
Catch every game all season long right here on the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While attacks on democracy norms ensue in Washington, state legislatures have also been busy. We have updates from Utah, Kansas, Indiana, and the contested North Carolina Supreme Court race. Voting Rights Lab reports that the Utah House is considering HB 300, which forces mail-in ballot users to deliver their ballot not by mail, but by hand to an official polling place where an ID can be presented. The elderly, disabled, and other voters for whom returning by mail is their only option would need to seek special permission. HB 332 would withdraw Utah from the Cooperative Electronic Registration Data Center, the subject of far-right conspiracy theories. The Kansas Senate passed SB 4, which requires receipt of mail-in ballots by 7 p.m. Election Day to count, rather than the current 3 days after. An Indiana Senate committee advanced SB 284, shortening early in-person voting from 28 days to 14 days, ending at noon the day before Election Day. The full Senate passed SB 10, ending use of school-issued student identification as ID for voting. In North Carolina, a district court judge dismissed a claim by a state Supreme Court candidate that in a race he lost by 734 votes, as many as 65,000 voters were ineligible. A federal appeals court may revisit it. We've linked the Voting Rights Lab tracker at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
To keep him strong, moving in the right direction, living just enough for the city. His father works some days for 14 hours, and you can bet he barely makes a dollar. His mother goes to scrub the floors for me. And you best believe she hardly gets a penny. Living just enough for the
All right,
city.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Text us at that same number. My guest is the award-winning journalist, writer, educator, speaker, Mr. Reggie Jackson. And I will say this before we go to the phone lines. You know, it's Black History Month, Reggie. And so, you know, this nation has seen fit to create, you know, Carter G. Woodson is the author of, you know, Black History. And programming, and certainly, you know, we now have that. And so when we have these conversations, you know, I guess it is Black History Month, so people kind of expect to have dialogue and conversation about this, Reggie, you know, once a year. But that's the problem, right? It's not, it shouldn't be a Black History Month, because the history of Black people in this nation has been from its inception. You know, you can't pick out one month and say, well, this is the month that we're going to have these conversations. It's one of the reasons why we can't move forward, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, you know, if you look back at the history of Black History Month, Earl, it started as Negro History Week back in 1926. Carter G. Woodson, a Harvard-trained historian, said, listen, it's not about Black history, it's about Blacks in history. We need to include the stories of Black people as they have, you know, lived throughout American history. We were some of the first people in this country, Earl. We've been here longer than many white ethnic groups. And we've been a part of the fabric of this country's history. And so he chose, you know, that week to, you know, have scholars from around the country you know, dig up evidence of our contributions to American society and to celebrate it. And eventually by 1976, it became a Black History Month officially. It had been celebrated as a month-long celebration since 1968. And so I think it's important that we understand that, you know, just because it's Black History Month, that doesn't mean that we can't study this history every other month as well. Dr. Woodson thought that, you know, eventually if we provided enough evidence of our contributions, this would become part of the normal course of education in this country, that everybody would learn about our contributions in their schooling, you know, K through 12 schools. But unfortunately, here we are all these years later, and now people want to erase that history and do the exact opposite of what Dr. Woodson wanted. And we're fighting, you know, to see this being taught in schools. And I could tell people, Earl, listen, most of this stuff is not being taught in schools. Very little of it is. And if you look at the state curriculum for social studies, you'll find that it's not required part of education for anybody in the state of Wisconsin to learn these things in a way that many people think. People think this is being forced down the throats of our children, but it really isn't. And I've worked with a lot of school districts around the state, Earl, in Milwaukee, in Sherwood, Greendale, Wauwatosa, Racine, Kenosha, La Crosse, you know, school districts. And I've talked to people and I've seen clearly that there's a thirst for understanding of this history, not just in February, but year round. They want to learn this history, Earl.
All right, let's go to Earl from Tulsa. Good morning to you, Earl. You say what?
The Earl or Eric, Earl?
All right.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Eric.
Oh, Eric.
Hi.
Okay.
Happy Motown Monday.
Yes, sir.
Jackson, and happy Black American History Month. Earlier, Earl, you spoke about Judeo-Christian values, but personally, I believe I can remember clearly a relative of mine recently saying that Black folks don't share those same Judeo-Christian values, which tells me that they're being taught this from the pulpit as well as elsewhere. And when talking about the current socioeconomic situation of Black folks, you know, we a lot of times we hear things have gotten better, but it hasn't improved nearly as much as it has for white counterparts. And then what I also hear often is that, quote unquote, they did it to themselves when speaking about these situations. But we see it from generation to generation. And I think this is because as young people go from public schools and playgrounds to the workforce and college, they face competition. And we revert back to our formative beliefs. And for white folks, those beliefs are that Black people are naturally inferior, untrustworthy, violent, on and on and on. And it gives us an excuse to circle our wagons and basically revert back to looking out for our own, which is why affirmative action laws were passed and why employers put diversity, equity, and inclusion in, because they saw that this is not healthy for the maturity and the evolution of our country. But that 2043 number is looming large, and they're seeing that coming, and that's why you're seeing a lot of this back, this drawback, pullback kind of thing. As far as Tom and the Packers, what I'll say about that is that let's not forget that the Packers are entertainers. And we, the white people, again, we've always allowed Black folks to entertain us, you know, music, sports, dancing, movies. But I also remember, and I was a kid even, but I remember how James Lofton was treated when he was accused of improprieties. They forgot all about the fact that he was a superhero on the gridiron, and that a lot of Black athletes considered Wisconsin to be basically Siberia for sports for this same kind of reason. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar went through the same experience in Milwaukee in the 70s. And lastly, not to steal words of others, but James Baldwin once said, ignorance allied with power is the most ferocious enemy justice can have. And I'll add that I believe the ignorance he spoke was willful. And that's we, the white people, having willful ignorance. And I'll hear it from your audience members every day. And that I believe that we'll continue to ask the dumbest question there can be. This is the loudest for it is, what do they want? What do they want? And this is really, truly a symptom of a nation that refuses to listen.
Hey, Eric, thank you very much for those really important words. I really appreciate it. Reggie Jackson is my guest. He is the author, writer, speaker, historian. You can join him as well, 855-752-4842, on a Motown Monday at the Earl Ingram Show.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. A new report found Wisconsin students are still lagging behind pre-pandemic levels for math and reading scores. According to the Education Recovery Scorecard released by the Center for Education Policy Research at Harvard University, Wisconsin students are months behind in math and half a grade behind in reading scores. Despite the lower scores, the state still ranked 16th for math recovery and 30th for reading recovery. The report also found over 80% of students are in districts that haven't recovered to 2019 achievement levels. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is asking residents to donate to their Endangered Resources Fund through their state income tax forms. According to a press release, the agency will match all donations made through the tax forms, with all of the funding going towards conservation efforts for rare plants, animals, and natural areas across the state. They will also help the agency combat the spread of invasive species like the emerald ash borer. The donations line can be found in the Schedule 3, Part 1A of the income tax form. Wildlife officials in the Twin Ports area say an interesting phenomenon has led to a rise in owls needing recovery care. According to Wildwoods officials, there has been an eruption event in the area. An eruption involves a large number of species leaving their primary habitats at the same time, which could put them in danger of wandering into unsafe areas for them. Organization officials say they've already admitted 21 owls needing care since January 1st, 18 of which were hit by vehicles. They say they usually only see 30 owls in an entire year. The Rice Lake City Council is asking residents for input on the potential purchase of the National Guard Armory. The now vacant facility on East Barker Street is being sold by the State Department of Military Affairs. The agency offered to sell the property to both the City of Rice Lake and Barron County, but the County Executive Committee recently declined to pursue the proposal. The City of Rice Lake would likely require a loan to acquire the property, but first wants to see what ideas residents have for the site before pursuing the purchase. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Welcome to the era of the mini-reality show. Reese Witherspoon, producer behind the new Legally Blonde prequel, Elle, filmed herself calling the actress who won the role of young Elle Woods. The series will be set during Woods' high school years, way before she became a lawyer. Witherspoon posted the vid to her TikTok, which also included recording the actress giving her mother the news. Here's hoping the actual series that will drop on Prime eventually will be just as entertaining. Oh yeah, the actress playing Elle will be newcomer Lexi Mindtree. Immensely popular stand-up comedian Nate Bargatze has not one, but two films in the works. Nate will star in the holiday film Christmas in Paradise after he completes playing the lead in The Breadwinner, a comedy he will also produce. Christmas in Paradise has Bargatze playing a small-town doctor who ends up getting a bounty on his head a week before Christmas. The project is still in the development stages and will be directed by tag director Jeff Tomczyk. It will be interesting to see if Bargatze's films are as funny as his act. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Hi, meteorologist Brandon Bormans. A frigid President's Day with mostly sunny skies, highs near zero, wind chill values as cold as 35 below. Tonight, mostly clear, a low of 23 below, wind chill values as low as 37 below. Stay warm and stay safe. Right now, 13 below.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Marquette University professor and pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin.
Deporting immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally. 60% support that. But when we ask the same question and just add at the end, including those with jobs and no criminal record, then support drops to just 43%.
Wisconsinites have a sense of fairness.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time. We'll take a look back at the weekend's headlines and give a preview to the spring primary election on Tuesday. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Put your bad self, say it louder.
take two eyes to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit until we get our share.
All right, welcome back to Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Reggie Jackson, award-winning journalist, writer, author, speaker. And so we're going to continue the conversation. Before we go back to the phone lines, James says, DEI is premised on misunderstood reasoning that certain perceived discriminated subgroups in America need a lift up. Whenever help subsidies are given to one special group in a free society, the upheld group will rise up and react with equal negativity. You want to respond to that, Reggie?
Well, thanks, James, for his opinion. I completely disagree. You know, I did diversity, equity, inclusion training for about 20 years, and I don't believe that it's based on misunderstood reasoning or it's about giving, you know, subgroups a lift up. It's about providing an even playing field, Earl. That's what it's about. It's providing access to people who've been left out of the rooms where decisions are made, who've been left out of access to things that most Americans take for granted. That's what DE&I is about. It's not about providing help or subsidies to any special groups, as he says. I completely disagree with him. And I think that he needs to talk to people that do DE&I training to get a clear understanding of what the work is about. He obviously hasn't spoken to anyone that does any of that training.
855-752-4842. Let's go to Mike from Kenosha. Hey, good morning to you, Mike. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Happy Motown Monday. Thanks for taking my call this cold, cold Monday morning.
Yes, sir. And you know, Mike, this is a conversation that people get uncomfortable with, but it's a conversation that's got to be had, right, man.
Got to be had, and we have to have it on a regular basis, not only on the air, but around the coffee table,
right,
around the kitchen table, it is highly effective when it reaches, you know, our locality, if you will. But, you know, I'm going to come at it as, and I agree with everything y'all have been talking about this morning, but, you know, racism has become profitable. Conflict is profitable. Our media is using it as a divide and conquer weapon, weaponizing against we the peeps. So we're not, we're focused on the shiny object, so to speak, as we talked about before, more so than, you know, any real conversation on specific tax policy, for example. And now we have foreign actors. You know, Russia has a whole military scheme of disinformation, misinformation. We know, we've been told by all of our security agencies that our social media is being dominated by bad actors, if you will, driving up conflict. And racism is as big of a conflict item as I can think of. But I have to go here, and that is, you know, here in America, we have the highest prison population by far. We have made conflict in racism a profit center, for crying out loud. And until we look at the profit created by conflict, whether it's domestic or whether it be, you know, military, there's something wrong with a system that celebrates high profit for the military or the prison industrial complex. It doesn't fit in my America that people continue to be exposed to profit centers and being imprisoned and much less all the divide and conquer. So the last thing I'd like to say is, until we get our heads on straight and look at the profit of conflict and racism, and take much as we can out of it. Unfortunately, cash is king.
Well, you know, Mike, you are a fair guy. Yeah, I've listened to you more than enough. You're more than most. You're a fair guy. You certainly willing to speak the truth about things. So do you ever think that there'll ever be a time when we'll be able to get past this, that in this nation we'll get, you have to turn your radio down, that we'll be able to get past this bigotry and racism?
I was more optimistic than before than I am now. America's taken a big backward step.
Yes.
Recently, and a lot of the things I never ever thought would be possible, Earl, are knocking at our front door. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here. But we see this divide and conquer. We see the attack on Muslims or brown skin. We see it on indigenous people. We see it on our Native American front. We see it with our Mexican
yes.
and Latino friends and neighbors. We see it everywhere we go. It seems to be them against us. And quite frankly, until Jesus comes down and, you know, the Sermon on the Mount is brought back into our consciousness of what it takes to be accepted, in heaven for those Christians in this hyper-religion era that we also find ourselves in. You know, we got to start walking the walk. Right now, America's kind of lost its way.
Hey,
it breaks my heart. It doesn't have to be this way.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for the call. You know, Reggie, he just summed up, you know, what we're dealing with, man. Okay, America has taken a backward step. And Donald Trump stands before the world and says, that's the way we want it, right? The American people, he speaks of the American people, and he leaves people of color out, Reggie. And he's got an army of people who agree with him, even though they know what he's talking about is based and predicated on racism and bigotry. But yet, even when you've got congressmen and senators, Reggie, I understand rank and file Americans, but when you've got elected officials who won't say anything about this, because they're in a position, Reggie, that their policies can make things even worse. You know, and so, yes, it's going backwards. But people who aren't willing to speak out about it, you know, I don't understand. Well, I do understand why, Reggie. Again, they feel, many of them apparently feel embarrassed by what's transpired or transpiring.
Yeah, I like to respectfully disagree with one of the things that Mike said. Actually, the first thing he said, that racism is becoming profitable. Racism has always been profitable, Earl. Listen, racism allowed people from England, France, the Dutch, the Spanish, the Portuguese, to literally steal land across the globe. It was very profitable with them. Racism was profitable in terms of stealing 15 million people from the continent of Africa and bringing them to these colonies that Europeans created in the Americas. It was profitable, so profitable that it lasted for hundreds and hundreds of years. So racism didn't all of a sudden become profitable recently, you know, with the prison system and things of that nature. It's always been embedded in the system to be, you know, profitable. And as we look at the current state of affairs, you know, people saying we're moving backwards. I don't think that we're necessarily moving backwards as much as we're kind of maintaining the pace that we've always had in terms of these things. Listen, racism has never gone away. You know, we've gotten rid of some of the vestiges of racism by law, you know, some of the policies, you know, which outlawed, you know, mixed marriage, we got rid of by Supreme Court in 1967. You know, the Voting Rights Act in 1965 did away with, you know, discrimination in voting rights. But, you know, that we are dealing with things that we've always dealt with in America, Earl. These are not new things. They may look new to some people who are uninformed about our history, but I don't think that we're necessarily moving backwards as much as we're you know, holding steady.
So, Reggie, do you think that because of the issues that rural America is dealing with, i.e. some of the very same things that people in urban America are dealing with. Lacks of opportunity, you know, food deserts, communities that have been disenfranchised because business has left their communities. You know, you've been there. You've traveled to those places. You've spoken with those people. And do you think that in many instances, it's easy to blame? Because I've heard this conversation that many people in rural America think that the Democrats spend more time dealing with the grievance people, i.e. people of color, you know, LGBTQ, and left rural, you know, Americans out. And they chose, you know, the urban grievance people over rural America. Your thoughts on that? You were there. You've spent many, you know, many hours and days and weeks in rural America. Your thoughts on that, on maybe that belief? Well,
I think, you know, the term, you know, rural America is euphemism for white people, Earl.
Right.
And, you know, as if there are no people of color in those rural communities. Listen, we have to understand that what these rural communities are dealing with across the state of Wisconsin and the nation is basically the same thing that black people have been dealing with for most of our time in this country. You know, we've been in situations where we've seen, you know, jobs disappear. And when jobs disappear in the black community, people say, we're just lazy. We don't want to work. No one ever says that when jobs disappear in these small rural communities, where white people are negatively impacted. They never say, oh, white people are just lazy. They don't want to work. We don't have any control over the jobs disappearing, Earl, but we're blamed for it. And white people are just, you know, victimized by it. But we're never supposedly victimized by jobs going away. I mean, black people came to Milwaukee for good, jobs, high quality jobs, and the jobs just start to go away. We didn't make Pabst go away. We didn't make Schlitz or A. O. Smith or Harnish Vega or any of these companies disappear. We were the victims of the jobs disappearing. And somehow when those things happen to white people, they're not blamed for it, Earl. And we talk about, you know, rural America and the Democratic Party is, you know, rejected rural America. I think that's just foolishness. And I think it's coded language. Listen, coded language doesn't work with me, Earl, because I figured out the code. I've broken the code. I know what they're saying. That's the way of pandering to white people to make them feel like they're victims of something. Well, you're victims of the same thing that we've been victims of throughout our history in this country.
You know, Reggie, I would say this. It's more than frustrating to me to constantly hear that, you know, again, the Democrats turned away from rural America. And as you stated, rural America is not just white. If you in the South, many, many blacks still live in rural America. And yet nobody's talking about them. The real issue here is that the people who have created these problems, Reggie, in many of these areas happen to have an R behind their name. And so you don't get out of it by voting for the very people who have done everything within their power to hurt both blacks and whites, poor blacks and whites, who we should be on the same page in this fight, Reggie, right? Because the same people who impacted and brought this pain on blacks have also brought it on whites. 855-752-4842. You're tuned into a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. My good friend Reggie Jackson.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Hey, it's me time at Chula Vista. Time for you to pamper yourself. Wisconsin's most complete resort experience has everything you want. Fine-tuned for 70 years by four generations of the Kaminsky family, Chula Vista can be easygoing with colorful scenic river walks, 18 holes of classic golf, a relaxing spa, or you can go all out in 80,000 square feet of indoor water park.
zip lining through canyon views in Chula's Aerial Adventure Park. And dining comes any way you like it, from pizza to Wisconsin's number one ranked steakhouse. More than 600 guest rooms to choose from, with $10 million in updates. Chula Vista, everything you've been wanting, all right here on site. Check it out at ChulaVistaResort.com.
Miles and miles of freshly groomed cross-country and hiking trails. Ski, sled, snowshoe. Warm up at our indoor water park. ChulaVistaResort.com.
Here's another community reminder from 107.5 WLAK. All are invited to take advantage of Ruby's Pantry for a $25 donation. You'll receive an abundance of food. All are welcome the second Saturday of each month. From 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m., the distribution is at SMC Limited, located on Griffin Street right here in Amory. Ruby's Pantry, another community reminder for you from 107.5 WLAK.
Hey Badger fans, time is running out to catch Wisconsin men's basketball at the Kohl Center this season. Don't miss your chance to see John Blackwell, John Tanjay, and the rest of the Badgers as they battle Big Ten opponents on their home court. Be part of the action and secure your seats today at uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. That's uwbadgers.com or 1-800-GO-BADGERS.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
All right, welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Text us at that same number. Again, Reggie Jackson is still online. Reggie, let me do this. Let me read this text, and then we'll bring you back on. It's bizarre, right? Because the white people pull stereotypical black people, gangs, thieves, thugs. But if you suggest that stuff done during the Reagan era, why black people are low income and, let me see what else he says, resort to things outlined early, and that's why they think the few who commit those crimes are the whole. You know, we do know, Reggie, that one of the reasons you see it on, you know, these as people run for office, we saw what happened with Mandela Barnes. We saw they trotted out, you know, the Willie Horton commercials or the Willie Horton, you know, commercials for Mandela Barnes. We saw them trotted out to Kamala Harris. We see them doing the exact same thing right now in the state Supreme Court. That stuff resonates with people, with whites who just want to believe that blacks are criminals and that we're coming to their neighborhoods. There's one commercial that I was watching recently where it talked about this one guy who was released from prison. And guess what? He's coming to your neighborhood. He's coming to your house next, and this woman who's running for Supreme Court, she let him out. You're next, your family's, and they buy into that, man.
Yeah, you know, they buy into it, Earl, because all of us as Americans have been bombarded with this foolishness for so many decades that we can't see straight. We don't know otherwise. You know, I tell people one of the greatest tools of misinformation is Hollywood. You know, we have all of these cop shows that we've been watching for decades in America that are perpetuating these images of black people as criminals. And we get fed this information so often that we don't understand it. It's not accurate, Earl. And so because of that, you know, I tell people, I call those shows copaganda. You know, the cops are always good guys and black people are always bad guys. You know, they're always irrational people doing irrational things. And, you know, we need to be protected from these people. And so I told people I stopped watching Law and Order years and years ago because I got so tired of just being fed stuff that was just so inaccurate and so racist, in my opinion, that I can't watch American cop shows, any of them. I don't care which show you pick. I can't watch them anymore, Earl, because I know that they're a tool of disinformation. They're designed to scare people into believing that, you know, we need to spend billions of dollars a year on prisons instead of spending billions of dollars a year on improving our education system, you know, spending money to improve, you know, access to economic opportunities. That's what we need to be spending money. You know, when I hear about, you know, this attempt by Elon Musk and his group of shady characters who, you know,
thugs,
find, you know,
thugs,
so-called
group of thugs.
Yeah, thugs. Yeah. You know, they're supposedly, you know, finding ways of making the government more efficient. Well, we should start with understanding who is most in need in this country and stop cutting off funds for organizations that need funding. I mean, they're closing Head Start programs around the country, Earl, because they're afraid of funding going away. And yet here we are. Here we are spending billions of dollars, giving billions of dollars to Elon Musk companies to send rockets up into space for no apparent reason. And, you know, spending billions of dollars on our U.S. military, even though there's no country that's threatening us right now. Literally, we're spending billions of dollars every year continuing to feed, you know, this military machine that, you know, we've been told, you know, we're in such, you know, danger from these other countries. You know, listen, Earl, for the last 50 years of my life, I've been told that Russia is the enemy. But now we have a president who is, you know, not only, you know, appearing to be friendly with Russia, but appears to be helping Russia to win its war against Ukraine. And we're spending, you know, billions of dollars around the world on our military. And we're ignoring people right here at home. You know, a lot of these people that are aggrieved are not understanding that, you know, they're being punished by people not giving access to programs and opportunities in their communities because we're spending money on stuff that I think is just ridiculously stupid.
Well, let's do this. Let's squeeze Cam in quickly. Cam, you say what? Quickly.
Hello, gentlemen. So I'm incredibly white myself. I am so white that I almost glow in the dark. But I do try to have that conversation about the racial disparity and give small history lessons as much as I can, like in the comment section about the Reagan stuff. What I think ends up being missed for a lot of the older generations and then what gets taught from them to the younger ones is that why do people go out and buy iPhones and get their nails, quote unquote, did, because they try to push the envelope that they're wasting money and irresponsibly when it's like you just try to get by, man.
Hey, Cam, thank you very much for the call. Hey, Reggie, thank you as always. We'll see you again next Monday.
Okay, thank you, Earl. Thank appreciate you. The opportunity.
Yeah, thank everybody who made the show go. Up next, Jane Matinere, Greg Bach Matinere on air. Cardi, thank you, man. Appreciate it. See you guys always on tomorrow. Man.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, are you exhausted, tired, fed up? We get it, but we want you to get involved. Luann Bird is going to join us to talk about ways to keep going. Don't miss it.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10. The Dom Salvia Show.
Inflation has to go down. How would you suggest your president address that? He's not talking about the cost for Americans. Hell, everything he's doing seems to going to increase the cost for Americans, starting with trade wars with Canada and Mexico. So if there is something positive out of this administration, let me know what it is. I would absolutely give credit where credit is due if I see it.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. 11 people are now confirmed dead in Kentucky as a result of extensive flooding. That brings the regional total to 12 people. In Kentucky, Hazard Mayor Donald Mobilini said people did not expect this kind of damage.
I think everybody missed the mark because it's supposed to have crested at 26 feet and it gets 30 and a half feet. That's the largest flood we've had since 1984.
Governor Andy Beshear urging people to stay off the roads in high water. Secretary of State Marco Rubio's in Saudi Arabia, where tomorrow he'll meet with Russian officials as the U.S. continues its goal of bringing an end to the war with Ukraine, between Russia and Ukraine. Kremlin spokesman said better relations, the reason why a 28-year-old American was released from jail after 10 days on a drug charge. Elon Musk's SpaceX team going to the FAA's Air Traffic Control Command Center to talk about what controllers need as Musk's Department of Government Efficiency continues sweeping cuts. This is ABC News.